Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. We're on section 8. Section 7. We had sadhu and asadhu speech. Two kinds of sound, articulate and inarticulate. Varna form and dvani form. Let's take it like that. The way I said it before, I think it was wrong. There is articulate sound, that's made out of varnas. And there's just sound or noise or music or animal sounds. That is dvani. Not in the sense of poetic suggestion, just dvani in the sense of sound. Now, of articulate sound, there's two kinds. There's proper and improper. Sadhu and asadhu. We discussed what it meant to be sadhu yesterday. We decided that that it's derived properly according to the rules of grammar, then it's the word is sadhu, otherwise asadhu. Now, the sadhu language is, again, of four kinds. In terms of what kind of reference, what kind of meaning it has, we're focusing here on individual words. Words can refer to four different kinds of things. It can refer to jatis, or universal categories, like cowness. It can refer to activities. Words can refer to qualities, or to individual things, substances. The word is dravya, but it means an individual object. Now, what do we mean by that? Well, four examples are given, four kinds, one example of each. Go, Pachaka, Shuklo, and Ditta. So go isn't actually, the word go should be understood properly as referring, of course, you can be talking about a particular cow, but first of all, the word go refers to the whole category of cowness. I call that thing over there cow because it possesses cowness. If it doesn't possess cowness, if it's actually a horse, then I'm mistaken to call it cow. So it's the first thing that such a word expresses in this first category is the category, the jati, that the individuals belong to. Now, other words, like the word pachaka, which means cook, it's referring to activity of cooking. It's a person who does cooking, so it's really describing an activity. And there are words like adjectives, like the word white, which refers to quality. And then you have proper names, which refer to nothing else but a single individual. Like the name Ditta is somebody's name, so it's referring to him and not anybody else. Those are the four kinds of reference, so we divide up the articulate words into those that refer to each of those four kinds. Now there's an alternative theory that's held by many that there aren't four kinds, there's only one kind of reference, that all words actually refer primarily to jati, to universals. I may say something about a particular cow, but that's extended meaning. The original meaning is just cowness. And then by putting it in a particular context, I can limit myself to talking about a particular cow. But that's actually not the original primary meaning, the particular cow, because the word cow applies to all cows.
this cow has its individual identity, but I don't express that identity just by the word cow. It's not the only cow. There are many other cows. So the word cow refers to cowness. This is the other theory, that we don't have four different kinds of reference. We only have one. All words primarily refer just to jati. And you can see, even with these four examples, you can point out a whole bunch of different cows, and you can say, this is a cow, this is a cow, this is a cow, and this is a cow. You've used the same phrase, but you're referring, what you're really talking about when you analyze it, they're not all the same cow. They're four different cows. But you use the same word, so what the word is expressing is what's the same about them. The cowness. And I may have somebody cooking rice, another person cooking dal, another person cooking the sabjis. I can say he's cooking, he's a cook, he's a cook, he's a cook. But they're cooking different things. And they're different people. So again, it's the cookness, the quality of being a cook that the word pachaka is referring to, according to this second theory. And there are many white things, like the moon is white, Chandra is white, and Chandana, sandalwood paste, is also white, and the kunda flower, jasmine flower, is also white. So I can say this is white, this is white, this is white. I'm referring to three different things, but the word white refers to the common whiteness that all that the moon, the sandalwood, and the jasmine flower share. The whiteness resides, it actually doesn't. According to Vaisheshika theory, according to Nyaya Vaisheshika philosophy, each quality in a thing is unique. The one jasmine has its own whiteness, and the other jasmine sitting on the other side of the branch has its own whiteness. The whiteness is unique to the thing, according to Nyaya philosophy. And if you want to find the common, you have to go one step further and find the whitenessness, the shuklatvata. That's common to all white things. We don't necessarily have to follow that theory. That's Nyaya philosophy. But a lot of times, even the Vaishnavacharyas go ahead and follow it, just for practical purposes. Because all the other pundits do, most of them, and because it's useful. Now, what about Ditta? How is his name going to refer to a category? That's a little more tough. There's only one Ditta. And if you look in the phone book, you'll probably only find one of them. There's no Ditta Sharma and Ditta Varma. There's not two different Dittas, only one. Let's suppose, only one Ditta. And anyway, if his mother is talking, she's talking about her son, not about some other Ditta. So how does Ditta refer to a category? Suggestion is made that you have Ditta when he was a baby, Ditta when he was 5 years old, Ditta when he was 50 years old, Ditta when he was 70 years old. The same person is there, but the bodies are different. And so met by extension, figuratively, it's a category. Of all the different Dittas, the one in this body, the one in that body, the one in that body, as the body changes. So dittiness is present in all in the baby's body, the boy's body, the old man's body. Dittiness is a common quality, common jati. It's one way to explain it. If you want to insist that all words refer to jati, we can also take the first theory that words can refer to jati or to kriya, an activity, or to a quality, or to a single individual, if it's a name, proper name. Kavi Karnapur is not, I don't think he's choosing between the two. You can take either theory. Okay, any questions on that? The word ditti is referring to a jati. I'm not saying that the person's a jati. That's the thing. Use the mic, we're recording.
refer, the word ditta is referring to jati, which is ditta, and that dittaness was residing in the child body, in the youthful body, and so on. But actually, they are non-existent anymore. This child and youthful body, like.
Oh, but you can read. You can.
And they won't exist anymore.
There's a problem that you cannot have you cannot have pratyaksha of a thing that's no longer present. Pratyaksha demands that there must be actual contact of the sense and the sense object. But there's no restriction that you can't talk about things that are no longer present. Words can refer to things that are past. That's why we have a past tense. You know, yesterday I spent all my money. Now I have no money. So you can argue, you don't have any money. How could you spend your money? You don't have any money. Well, yesterday I had money. Now it's all spent. So my money is gone. I don't have any money now. But I had money before, and I can talk about it in the past tense. But I can't. I want to open my wallet. I can't see my money. It's not there. There's no pratyaksha, but there's talking about it. Reference of word to meaning the thing doesn't have to be present or still existing. So the baby ditta, he's gone, but we can still talk about him.
It's more a matter of how we use the words, that's it. It's not really something. Reality is not really reality. It's just how we use words.
Okay, but we want to study philosophically how do people use words.
Okay, so that's
we want to actually try to exactly understand what does it mean to use words.
Yeah.
Yes.
Does it refer to jati in itself, or is it an exception?
I don't know if there's a jatiness.
Exactly, because it becomes self-referential.
You're going to have such, dilemmas, contradictions in the theory. I don't think it's the preferred theory.
Right,
it's a radical theory. It's held by some grammarians and some poeticians, but it runs into problems.
So that could be a good argument.
I don't know
again if
there is such a thing as jatiness. That's for the logicians to say. I don't remember.
Yeah, it becomes short-circuited at that point, that theory. That's a good argument against it.
Yeah, you got words. You got words that it's very hard for them to be. Some words are going to be. It's going to be very difficult to have them refer to jatis. Especially, what about words that don't refer to things? You know, that just like connecting words. The word "and," what jati does that refer to? You know, the jati of conjunct. Conjunct is a word. Jati of conjunctions. Yeah, but it does. When I say. Okay, it's hard to understand how the word "and" resides in all the conjunctions. First of all, conjunctions are a mental conception. You know, things are conjoined because we think they're conjoined. You know, we create the conjunction in our mind. Right? I say, give me one rasgulla and one gulab jamun. Well, the rasgulla and the gulab jamun have nothing, you know, aren't related. They're not brother and sister. You know, you can say they're both sweets, but still, I'm creating the conjunction by deciding I'd like to have one rasgulla and one gulab jamun. So it's a mental creation, the conjunction. And so I don't know objectively how Chuck can refer to all the conjunctions when it's not a stable category. You know, it's just whatever you think is a conjunction is a conjunction. It's too loose. How Chuck can refer to the total category of conjunctions. Because you can have an infinite number of conjunctions if you think about it. If you just imagine them, they exist. Say it again.
White cow and say it has the quality of cowness. There may be so many other cows which might have in different colors, but this is just a white, a particular part of it. Similarly, we can say like any other conjunction, or because.
No, but then you're belying the theory. The theory is that it should refer to the jati, the totality of all conjunction. If it's only referring to a particular conjunction, then it's not referring to jati. It's referring to individual. Then you throw the theory away. We're having a problem with the theory, so you just throw it away.
which we probably should. Or we should use it with we should use this theory with a grain of salt, because it runs into problems. The theory that all words refer to jatis. Because a lot of times they're actually referring to individuals, or to qualities, or to activities. That's why Kavi Karnapur presents that theory first. It's the more practical theory. Let words refer to all four kinds of entities. Yeah.
Okay, so we speak that first we have Nama, then Rupa, Guna, and Lila. So in this connection, it seems that Nama it's Dravya, then Rupa and Guna it's come to the category of Guna.
No,
then,
I don't think
then,
so. I don't think so.
Then Lila in some way is Krishi, is Dravya, is Kriya, and you don't have Jati.
Not exactly, because Nama is broader than that. Nama doesn't just mean proper name. It's giving anything a name. If I see something that's got four legs and it's brown and it's got a dewlap, that's a cow. I perceive the form, the rupa. And then I say, that's a cow. I didn't say which cow. I didn't name it. I don't know the name of that particular cow. I just say, that's a cow, like that, like all the other cows. So that's referring to a jati, but that's in the category of nama. So nama doesn't distinguish between jati and dravya. It includes both.
So practically, when we speak about...
Well, just like, you know, what you're, that system of nama, guna, and kriya, whatever, is not corresponding. It's a different grouping.
For example, we speak that everything is concluded in nama, in Krishna's name, for example.
But everything has a name. All things have name, including categories, including generalities. They also have names. Astitvam gyeyatvam abhideyatvam is a principle enunciated by the logicians. If it exists, it can be known. Anything that exists should be knowable. And anything that's knowable should be nameable. So anything that exists, including a category or an abstraction, also has a name. Not just individual concrete things.
So in this way, if you speak about Krishna's name, we actually refer to Krishna, to Krishna, to jati, Krishna'sness, the quality of being Krishna.
In the theory that all words refer to jatis, yes, it's just Krishna. But there's the Krishna in, you know, Krishna in the cradle, Krishna killing Putana, Krishna killing, you know, lifting Govardhan. Those are, in a sense, metaphorically different Krishnas. Or you can say there's a category with only one element. You know, Krishna is a category, or Bhagavan is a category that has only one member. There's no two Bhagavans, only one. That's another way of looking at it. It's a category, but it only has one member. Okay, now we move into section 8. There are three kinds of meanings of words. Mukhya, Lakshinika, and Vyanjana. These correspond to the three modes of expression of meaning that words have. Words have three different kinds of powers, and those three powers create three different kinds of meanings. The principal meaning, or the literal meaning, the figurative meaning, and the suggested meaning. Third one is Vyanjana, or Dhwani. Here we're using these words as adjectives. They're referring to the kind of meaning. We use Vyanjana also as a noun, meaning actually Vyanjana means the thing that's expressed, the thing that's suggested. So words express their meanings in these three different ways, have these three different kinds of meanings. Let's discuss, first of all, what is mukhya meaning? What is principal or literal meaning? We call it vachaka. It's the primary idea that's expressed by the word. Yes?
No, no. It means, the word Vajika here means the first, the primary meaning expressed by the word. It has other meanings, but they're not called Vajika. The other ones are called Lakshinaka. You just say that Vajika is a synonym for Mukhya, that's all. It's chosen as a matter of technical jargon. When we say Vajika, we don't just mean expressed. We mean specifically literal meaning, expressed in a literal way. It's the same as Mukhya or Abhida. Another name for it is Abhida Vritti. Vritti means function, but here it means mode of speaking, mode of expressing. So the literal mode of expressing is called Mukhya. It's called Vachanika, and it's also called Abhida or Abhidana. Abhidana also means dictionary. We can also call this the dictionary meaning. You look up a word, it will give, first of all, the primary meaning in the dictionary. Also, it may give many meanings. But, like, Ganga, if you look up Ganga in the dictionary, it may say, a river, name of a river. And it may also say name of an author. There's somebody called Ganga, who's also, a man called Ganga. He may also show up in the dictionary entry. Or maybe there's some other meaning of Ganga also. But you won't see a village on the shore as a dictionary. The dictionary won't say that Ganga means village on the shore. That's a Lakshinika extended meaning. It doesn't show up in the dictionary. The Mukhya meanings show up in the dictionary. There may be multiple principal meanings, but they're all literal. They don't involve any figurative extensions or suggestions. That's what you see in dictionaries. And another way of defining the principle or the literal meaning, that which has a power, a conventional power of expression that's been assigned to it by the Supreme Lord. There's a convention involved. The word, asyandika means a table in Sanskrit by convention. So, and that the convention of words are basically created by God. Now, we may also create our own words. In addition to the words God created for us, we may add more words. We may come up, call my son Ditta, and that's suppose it's a new name. I make up a name that nobody ever had before. I can do that. I have a son. I can make up a name for him, even a word that doesn't exist. And so I've created a word. But usually these created words are proper names, names of individuals. And in referring to the individual that it's actually naming, a proper name is expressing its literal meaning. It has mukhya meaning when it's referring to the individual. So sankheta actually, what is convention? Convention is actually the desire of God that it means such and such. God made the choice. We learn our languages, but we don't normally create them. Not a real language. Nobody creates a real language. We may create artificial languages. But natural languages are created by God. And it's his desire what each word means. Samkheta ichecha tatra tatva krit. Tatva krit. It's God who makes the tatva. Who creates the situation of a word having a literal meaning. That's what tattva means here. The condition of a word having a literal meaning, that's produced by God. It's a power imparted to it by God, imparted to words. It's the power that the word is given
to allow it to express the meaning. When you say when you hear the word gata, it's carrying a power in it to make you think about pot. It reminds you of pot. For example, suppose there's a young child who doesn't know what certain words mean. But the eldest in the family, the father, say, tells the older brother, bring me a pot, bring me the pot. Gatam anaya. And that older boy, the younger boy sees the older boy now brings to the father this thing with a, you know, shape like this, clay thing with a neck on it. And then he decides, oh, what the word pot must mean is this particular thing that my older brother just brought. He's actually wrong. According to the jati theory, it's actually referring to the, well, actually, even we say, it doesn't just, the word pot doesn't just refer to one thing, it refers to all the pots. So he's only begun to learn what pot means when he says, it means bring this thing. It doesn't mean just bring that thing, it means, you know, it can refer to any pot. He hasn't learned that yet. So first of all, a person learns a noun, the meaning of a noun. He naively thinks it to refer to one particular thing. And then the father tells that older boy, bring me my chatter. And you got the same verb bring, but a different noun. It's something other than a pot. So he says, oh, this word pot refers to something special. This other thing is not pot. This chatter is not pot. There's a contrast being established by the word. It's referring to what is not a pot, the word pot. And then when he hears, bring me the other pot, bring me another pot, I need another one, I broke this one. Then the boy realizes, he uses his logical capacity to reason, the word must refer to not just individual, but to something that all the pots have, to potness. I don't know how a little boy is going to think like this, but this is a theoretical analysis. We do this. We do this naively. We don't think it in so many words. We come to the conclusion that the word pot refers to all the pots. Any pot. Even a pot that doesn't exist yet. Okay, words can refer to things that don't exist yet. Now, the meaning is ready. When the pots get created, every day the potters are making thousands of pots. It's not like they also have to make words to go with them. You know, not to let, you know, along with the potters, you have to have a whole group of word makers to make words for all the pots. No, the word is already there, pot, and it serves well for all the pots, even the ones that aren't made yet. Anyway, that's the process of learning the literal meaning of the word. If you understand by contrasting sentences, by comparing sentences that are similar and different, by apoha and anvaya and apoya, by comparison and contrast, you see that a pot is not a cloth, and a pot is any pot, not just this one pot. So you realize it refers to a jati. That's how you learn the meaning of the word, just like the meaning of the word cow. It refers to cow as something separate from horse and airplane and everything else, but it does refer to all the cows. Okay. Yes. Take the microphone.
The process of learning is only for the conventional meaning, is it right?
Well, we're saying there's convention involved in all meaning. Some words have derivational meanings But the fact that a word has a differential meaning is by convention. There's always convention involved. There's a, you know, someone decided, and it was actually God, that Pankaja is going to mean, or that, you know, some derived word is going to have its meaning. What, let me, an example of derived word is Aditya, son of Aditi. It's just the idea of son of Aditi just comes from adding a particular suffix to the name Aditi, to the name Diti, Aditi. Then you get Aditya, son of Diti. It can refer to any son of Diti. She has 10 sons. Or any descendant. It can also refer to her grandsons and great-grandsons. Aditya. That's a conventional word. Word with derived meaning. Still, it's a convention that it does have that derived meaning. It could be the convention established by God that the demigods are called something other than Adityas. It was God's choice that they get called Adityas, even though you can explain it as a derivation. The fact that that derivation applies to that, you know, that word has that meaning is still conventional. Okay, so we're talking about being conventional on two different levels. All words are conventional. But then among those words, some of them are called conventional because the meaning is not explainable by derivation. And the ones that can be explained by derivation, they're really conventional under the surface, but they have an apparent derivational meaning. Okay?
Yeah. So this whole process which she explains is only for the Mukhya, for Lakshanika and...
We're talking about Mukhya meaning, learning Liya. We're not going to get into... We're only focusing now on primary meaning, literal meaning. Other we'll see later.
In the case of artificial languages which are created by men, for example, we have some programming language like C++, so, and we have some conception, abstract conception, like some procedure or something else which consists of this language. So it was said that all conventional meaning are created by the Lord, but in this case we can see that it was created by men. So does
it mean it's just an artificial. I can build a robot too, but it's not alive.
Yeah. But does it
I can build an artificial man, yeah. But it's not really a man. Artificial language is not really a language.
But it refers to some particular categories, and we can use them, and practically we can see that it's practical. So does it mean
a,
that
a real language a real language should be able to explain describe anything? And you know, I should be able, if I'm a poet, to explain, you know, the taste of strawberry ice cream. Okay, you know. What's the experience? You know, strawberry ice cream is so wonderful. I have to explain. I have to write a poem about it that expresses. And as a poet, I can do it. But you can't do that in Fortran. You can't explain to a computer the taste of strawberry ice cream. So your computer language can express some ideas, but it's not a complete language. It's just a stump of a language. You know, parakeets can also chirp in different ways that express meanings. They have aggressive chirps and friendly chirps, and they're expressing different emotions. But it's because it's not a complete gamut of meaning. They can't talk about strawberry ice cream or about the meaning of existence. You know, parakeets can't do that. So what their language, their so-called language, is not a full language. It's just a fragment of a language. The same thing with computer languages.
Yes. But still, in conceptual way, can we tell that this creative potency to create at least this much language was given by the Lord?
Yeah. Where are you going to get it from if you don't get it from God? To be able to even make an imperfect, incomplete example of an artificial language, you have the power to do that. It has to come from God.
So in all cases, he's an ultimate authority.
He's the ultimate creator of all languages.
Either complete or incomplete.
Yeah, even artificial. you know, there have been attempts to write complete languages, to create complete languages, like, what do they call that? Esperanto? But, you know, Esperanto is really made, you know, is really derived from, first of all, it's cannibalized from existing languages. You know, the words aren't all completely made up. A lot of it's borrowed from existing, and also it doesn't work very well. Yeah. It's not a natural language. I don't know, but, you know, and they tried to promote it, and a few dozen people in the world play around with it, but nobody seriously uses it, you know, in their ordinary life, because it doesn't work as a real language. And that's a grand-scale endeavor to make a language. It didn't work. You know, who was it? Vishishta? Or Vishamrita? Vishamrita wanted to create an animal. You know, he wanted to imitate Brahma. So he tried to make his own kind of cow, and it turned out buffalo. You know, some things were missing, like sweat glands. You know, it didn't work. Brahma can make species of life. You try to do it, it doesn't come out right. Sorry. Buffalo brains. Anyway, he's empowered to do it. It's a real species of life, but just an example. No, Brahma let he let Vishvamrita, his offspring, you know, his grandson, or Vishvamrita is directly son of Brahma. No, great grandson, whatever. Brahma, Brahma let him do it. He gave him the power to do it, to create the buffalo. I don't know. It's a pastime. There were, you know, before that ever happened, there were buffaloes in previous, you know, but it's just a pastime. Take the microphone. It's being recorded.
Four kinds of languages that are being referred to in the Vedas, like what do they refer to?
It says... Four kinds of languages?
Chatvari vak parimita padani tani vidur brahmana ye manishinaha guhatrini nihita nengayanti turiyam vacho manushya vadanti.
That is referring to the four levels of the manifestation speech that we already looked at in the beginning of the book that Shankaracharya was describing. There's the... You know, the sound, the nada that manifests in the Muladhara chakra, it moves up to the navel. And then in the heart, it becomes linked with intelligence. Then it comes out of the mouth. Those are the four levels that language progresses in manifesting. So only the one that comes out of the mouth is known to human beings. The rest of them are hidden. When we're not talking about animal speech, and that doesn't refer to animal speech. Yeah, but I don't think that's just distinguishing the language of humans, the language of demigods. I don't think that's the distinction there. I'm saying that because I somewhere there's an analysis of that statement. I think it's somewhere in the Sandarbhas, and it refers to the same process of sound, of language manifesting from the subtle form to the concrete form on four levels. Maybe there's another interpretation too. With the microphone, yeah.
I was thinking it's some kind of language. Yeah, I was
different
mistaken.
Kinds of language.
I was mistaken.
I don't think that, the way I've seen it explained, it doesn't refer to that. There could be that other explanation. But what are the four kinds then? There are four different kinds of language in each of the four Vedas. Each of the four Vedas is in a different kind of language. That's why you have four different kinds of mantras. It's actually four different kinds of language. The language of the Yajurveda is what is called performative. It creates the reality. Oh, you are the womb of Aditi. You are the womb of the earth. You're talking to a clay pot, the Ajurveda priest. And he's making the pot into the womb of a ditti for the sacrificial purpose. So it can be worshipped. The womb of the earth. But it's just a clay pot. But by the words, he makes it something special. And the other Vedas, their mantras serve different purposes because they're different modes of language, different kinds of language. But I don't know if that statement refers to that. Because why would it say only one of them is known to human beings? The fourth one. Well, the fourth one is, according, you know, it would be the one coming out of the mouth, the concrete speech. But if you're talking about the language of the Rig Veda, the language of the Yajurveda, Sama, Tavra, why is only one of them manifest? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't fit. So that's not talking about that then. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Shrimad Alankara Kostava Ki Jai.